We're pleased to have Craig L. Manning as our speaker this morning. Dr. Manning is a performance psychology consultant, author, and an adjunct professor of performance psychology here at BYU. He currently serves as performance consultant for the university's athletic department. Dr. Manning earned his bachelor's and master's degrees in psychology from BYU and a doctorate in sports psychology from the University of Utah. Brother Manning played tennis at both the collegiate and professional levels. In addition, he served as the head coach of the BYU women's tennis team for 10 years. He has experienced the highest level of performance from the unique perspective of player, coach, and applied scientist. After years of research and application in the field of human performance, Dr. Manning has found that the key to success in athletic, business, or personal pursuits is the application of psychological skills. He and his wife, Mackenzie, are the parents of four children. Now we'll be pleased to hear from Craig Manning.
I'm a mental strength coach, so I better be mentally tough right now. So, I'd like to explain how the sequence of when I was first contacted to speak at this devotional. It was a Monday when I got a text from a number I didn't recognize. It had been a hectic day, and I didn't fully read the text. I thought it was a request to speak at an upcoming church assignment. I text back politely asking who the text was from. President Richardson responded that it was he who had sent the text and was asking me to speak at a BYU devotional. The first thought that popped into my mind was, are you crazy? Do you not realize I barely speak the English language, let alone speak in front of so many people? My wife, who was with me at the time, responded immediately without hesitation, that's desperation, not inspiration. I text back, President, with, I think you have the wrong Craig Manning. President Richardson then replied with, oops, sorry, I do have the wrong person. President did clarify that he had the right person. As intimidating as it is to speak in front of you, the preparation experience has been great. I found that every time I put on the radio, every activity, every thought I have double-checked myself to make sure I'm in alignment with the Holy Ghost so as to have the Spirit with me. I do pray that the Spirit is with me today as I deliver my thoughts. I'd like to talk to you today about a couple of life-changing lessons the Lord has taught me. I was born and raised in Canberra, Australia. My mother was and still is a Catholic, and my father was a member of the Church of England before passing of cancer 20 years ago. We attended church on Sundays, and I attended Sunday school, completing my first Holy Communion. As I got older, I started playing rugby. Games were on Sundays, and it wasn't long before we stopped attending church. I remember coming home from a rugby game one Sunday when my mother said to me, you're really good at sports, so you won't be very good at school. The statement confused me, although I didn't have the maturity and clarity of thought at the time to articulate my emotions. I can look back now and see why the statement bothered me. Was there some phenomenon that controlled my destiny? I couldn't help being good at sports. It just seemed to happen. Every time I participated in an athletic contest, I was reminded that I was a good athlete. So did that mean I had no chance of ever being a good student? Did I have any say in any of this? I don't mean to accuse my mother of bad parenting, but rather to illustrate what can happen when we don't understand the Lord's plan, or more important, when we don't learn to live the gospel and to apply the gospel of Jesus Christ. I spent my teenage years focusing the majority of my attention on sports, particularly tennis, while directing little attention to my academics. It had become a habit, and I never really stopped to consider anything different. This was not to say that I wasn't attending school. I never missed a class unless ill. But just because I was there in body does not mean I was there mentally. I was passing classes without really learning anything. I don't believe I was unintelligent. I was just never really paying attention. From the lectures on faith, we read, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. From this we learn that faith is the assurance which men have of the existence of things which they have not seen, and the principle of all action in all intelligent beings. My personal interpretation, without a belief that it is possible to be successful in the classroom, I will not put forth any action towards being successful. I have been in the classroom in body, but I was not there mentally. My mind was somewhere else. When I was in high school, my mind was more often than not on the tennis court. Also from the lectures on faith. If men were duly to consider themselves and turn their thoughts and reflections to the operations of their own minds, they would readily discover that it is faith and faith only which is the moving cause of all action in them, that without it, both mind and body would be in a state of inactivity, and all their exertions would cease, both physical and mental. My personal interpretation? We don't do anything without first putting in the mental effort. If we're not mentally engaged, we do nothing, or at best, we do very little. On the tennis court, I had the belief I was good or could be good first, which led to the physical effort and hard work second. In the classroom, I did not believe I was smart or could be smart. I turned up physically but did not apply myself mentally. I love D&C 130:18-19. Whatever principle of intelligence we attain unto in this life, it will rise with us in the resurrection. And if a person gains more knowledge and intelligence in this life through his diligence and obedience than another, he will have so much the advantage in the world to come. My interpretation? To me, these two scriptures map out the formula for success. We need to work hard, both mentally and physically, to increase our knowledge and intelligence. By the time I had graduated from year 12, I'd become an accomplished tennis player. I was selected to travel Europe with a team of Australian prospects. We spent the first month in France traveling around playing small pro tournaments. It was the end of the winter, so the tournaments were on indoor fast courts. Being from Australia and growing up playing on artificial grass courts, my tennis game was built for quick, explosive points. I did well the first month, performing to my potential and winning a lot of matches on the fast indoor courts. I thought, this is it. I'm making my dreams come true. Feeling really good about myself, we left France for Austria. The first tournament of the summer was on slow red clay. If you don't understand the mechanics of the greatest game ever invented, and also I might add the toughest mental sport to master, going from fast indoor courts to slow red clay requires a dramatic shift in skill sets. For the first time and only time in my life, in the 40 years of playing tennis, I lost 6-0, 6-0, a double bagel, we call it. It rocked my world. I had no idea what had gone wrong. Unwisely, I dwelled on my deficiencies from the match for days. A week later, I was still dwelling on the loss. At the time, I didn't realize I was doing anything wrong. I've since learned that dwelling obsessively on what we do wrong is one of the greatest sources of interference to maximizing our potential. Self-doubt is dangerous. I once had a young 13-year-old snowboarder. In answer to my question of what it meant to doubt yourself, he said, "Don't say don't." Unimaginable the damage that self-doubt does to your hopes, dreams, and to the hard-earned skills. This is what doubt looked like for me. I would miss a backhand into the top of the net, and I'd start to say to myself, "Not again. Your backhand stinks. You can't make a backhand. Why do you even play this game? You just stink." The problem is, doubt doesn't just stay isolated to your backhand. Doubt is a mental habit and doesn't stay contained to one area of your life. It can and does spread to other areas of your life. Not identifying the root of the problem at the time, I struggled on the tour for the next year and a half, ending my pro aspirations. My poor performance would later be a blessing as I never made any money and could still claim amateur status. I've since that time seen self-doubt in many people, athletes, coaches, musicians, students, children. And as a bishop, I see it in the ward members I'm a steward over. Once it takes hold of an individual, action is halted. I believe doubt to be one, if not the greatest, of the adversary's tools. It is the antithesis of faith. As President Monson said in his October general address, fear and faith cannot coexist. For me, when the opportunity arose to come and play tennis at BYU, I thought it was an opportunity to reset. However, I quickly learned that practice does not make perfect. Once a bad habit is created, it is not going away anytime soon. Not without, and that was the problem. I didn't know how to fix it. I knew faith was at the root of the answer, but how do you do faith? How do you apply faith on the tennis court, in the classroom, in life, from one moment to the next? I thought that the answers may come from the field of psychology. I'd always been fascinated by the mind and believed it was a key component to not just success on the tennis court, but in life. I switched from accounting into psychology and began a journey that has led me to many, many personal discoveries. None bigger than no matter how well the scientific method is applied to human behavior, if I cannot find the parallelism within the gospel of Jesus Christ, I'm very cautious about its usage. If a connection can be clearly made between a natural law and the gospel, I have found it always helps people be better. One such law is the law of occupied space. This law states that an object can only occupy one place at a time. As it applies to the mind and both faith and fear, self-belief and self-doubt, or simply positive and negative thoughts cannot occupy the mind at the same time. DNC 130, 2021 states, "There is a law irrevocably decreed in heaven before the foundations of this world, upon which all blessings are predicated." When we attain any blessing from God, it is by obedience to that law upon which it is predicated. My interpretation, any law that is discovered by man or woman was originally created by the Lord, and if we would like to obtain any blessing, like winning a tennis match or building a loving relationship with a spouse, requires obedience to that law. I love this law and have received tremendous blessings from learning how to apply it. What I realized and started working on was every time I caught myself thinking, talking to myself in negative, reactive ways, "Your backhand stinks," or "Don't miss my backhand," I would stop that thought and immediately replace it with, "I love my backhand. I'm going to rip it down the line." Instead of saying to myself, "School is tough, BYU is too hard for me," I started telling myself, "I got this. I can get good grades." Here's one of my favorites. "I will remember this." At some point, I realized I was always saying to myself, "Don't forget this," or "You better not forget this for the exam. It took some time, but everything started to change. I was playing amazing tennis, at least for me. I was studying half the time and getting better grades, a lot better. More important, there was no more fear. It was a constant work of progress, a constant battle to apply the Lord's lessons. This is potentially the greatest lesson the Lord has taught me. Faith begins with how you talk to yourself. From the lectures on faith, we read, "It is by words that every being works when he works by faith. God said, 'Let there be light,' and there was light. Joshua spake, and the great lights which God had created stood still. Elijah commanded, and the heavens were stayed for the space of 3 years and 6 months, so that it did not rain. All this was done by faith. Faith, then, works by words. And with words, its mightiest works have been and will be performed." As I continued my education, my passion for wanting to understand the application of true principles, the application of facts continued to grow. I was fortunate that BYU hired me as the women's head tennis coach, and I worked hard at applying what I was being taught. As the time arrived to do my dissertation, I wanted to study how attentional control or focus impacted human performance. While working on my dissertation, I would awake early in the morning and pray for guidance from the Lord. It is a draining experience, full-time job, 4 kids, and writing a dissertation, something that did not come easy for me. I'll forever be indebted to my wife's sacrifices during this period of time. Out of this experience, the Lord taught me how to take principles, facts or ideas, and break them down to actionable knowledge. It is called mind mapping or coding the mind. Turning knowledge into action or a skill, not just a physical skill, but a mental skill. This is done through the creation of relevant cues. A relevant cue is 2 to 3 words, actionable words, that act as triggers, exact enough to hold an individual's attention under extreme pressure or under extreme boredom. These cues enable an individual to direct their attention to very specific actions, creating relevant skills rapidly. I was amazed by the dramatic increase in performance from the tennis players we were working with. Prior to using relevant cues, I would work hard during an hour tennis lesson to have the athlete hitting the ball well by the end of the hour, only to have them return the next lesson and have to spend the first 20 to 30 minutes going back over what we last worked on. Retention was not where it needed to be. Upon using relevant cues, retention was increased to the point it would only take 5 minutes max to review the previous skills as the skills had been retained, thus allowing for rapid progression to the next skill. I started applying this to other sports, then business, then music, and now to addiction recovery. One such individual was a U.S. Olympic mogul skier who 7 months prior to the Vancouver Olympics was on the C team and not ranked very high. Her coach approached me to work with her in the attempt that she might be ready to compete at the Sochi Olympics 4.5 years down the road. I remember the conversation. The coach wanted to test the effectiveness of mental strength training. He said to me that this particular athlete would do what I asked and that she was my guinea pig. The athlete worked hard on training her thoughts to be positive, proactive, and to use relevant cues to purify her thought patterns. She did everything I asked. On November 19th, she called me in tears. She had just made the last discretionary position on the World Cup tour. This decision was a subjective coach's decision to bring someone onto the World Cup team with minimal professional experience. As the season progressed through the early winter months, the athlete continued to develop her skills rapidly, to the point by the time Deer Valley, the U.S. World Cup came around at the end of January, this athlete was sitting in 10th place on the tour. She'd achieved several fourth place finishes to get to 10th in the world, but had never finished on the podium. One of the skills I like the athletes I work with to have is a power statement. A power statement is a tool to use when the doubt comes at critical moments. A power statement floods the mind with positive, strong thoughts and squeezes any negative thoughts and emotions out instantly. After the pre-qualifier, the athlete was in fourth place. She attended to all of the media obligations, family commitments, etc., then came over to me to talk to me. This is the conversation that transpired. Athlete: I don't think today is my day. Me: really? Athlete: there's a ton of media here, a lot of friends and family. I don't think today's my day. Me: yeah, you just stink, don't you? Athlete: what? Me: is that the right mindset? Athlete: all right, I need to remember my power statement. The athlete told me after the event that she had got on the chairlift right up for her finals run, and the doubt got in again. It's okay. No one expected you to do this well. My family will still love me. She caught herself and said, no, today is my day. I'm making it happen today. She told me she was good mentally while she was being processed and was standing in the line with only 2 athletes from her turn when the doubt came in again. It's okay. No one expects you to. This time she was mad. Gets out of her skis and walks out of the starter's box and yells up into the mountain, today is my day. I'm making it happen today. You could see her determination as she came back into the starter's gate, put on her skis and grabbed her poles, and she put them down with purpose. She ends up skiing faster than she'd ever skied before, was further on the front of her boots, got bigger air, and ended up finishing in first place. 2 days later, she backed up her performance with a second place. This athlete, who 6 months earlier was called a guinea pig, went to Vancouver Olympics as the number two mogul skier in the world and our top U.S. mogul skier, all while applying the principles of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I love studying the mysteries, the Lord's mysteries, and I love the Book of Mormon. I make these comments in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.